disturbing discovery at an abandoned mobile home park.
Another suicide.
The nation's suicide rate is at its highest point since 1986.
When police came to the house, they saw tons and tons of trash. Turns out the daughter is a hoarder.
Crews made the gruesome discovery today inside a home.
They had 70 cats and dogs, mostly dogs. They found one deceased kitten inside the home.
A woman was found dead in a local home. That house had been tented for fumigation work.
The following is a true story and contains explicit content. Names and locations have been kept anonymous in order to protect the privacy of those involved. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Vanessa Fearson, and this is a true story. I was contacted by a county public administrator's office, and they wanted us to provide a bid for a cleanup on a property they had recently taken possession of. I'm always happy to provide our services, so of course we obliged and scheduled a time to meet up with a representative. He explained that since it was a county job, they needed to get multiple bids, and they wanted to meet everyone at once. So this meant I would be bidding on a job at the same time as some of our competitors. Now, most people would think that this situation would be intimidating or uncomfortable, but I relish in these opportunities. I don't intimidate easily, and I like to see how the other guys present themselves. Not to toot my own horn or anything, but they usually end up making us look really good. Now, this may seem like a sidetrack, but bear with me. Some time ago, I was contacted by a restoration company who had subbed out a decomp to a competing crime scene cleaning company. Well, I guess she had some concerns as to the quality of work or the validity of the invoice the company had submitted, because she asked me to come out and take a look at it and tell her what I would have charged her. I thought it was a great opportunity to see how the big guys do their work and how it compared to ours, so I agreed. I went out to the home and took a look at what they had done. The first thing I noticed when I walked in the door was the odor. What is commonly known as dead man odor is exactly that. It's the smell of a dead body. And it was very present throughout this home. It was quite evident that very little, if any, odor remediation steps were taken. I pointed that out right away and added that, had we done the work, there wouldn't have been any odor by the time we were done. She took me down the hall, and the evidence of work being done was obvious. I couldn't tell how bad the situation had been prior to the work being done, but it looked to me like the work they had been done well. They had removed a section of the hardwood flooring in the subfloor, as well as a 4-foot-long, 10-inch-high section of the wall. This is not uncommon, so nothing really caught my attention. Now, again, I don't know the extent of the body fluids that had been present, nor how far they had actually reached. But based on the work done, I assumed that it had badly affected these areas, and I didn't think anything of it. The only thing I really thought was slightly odd was they had left the remaining wall free-floating without any brace or anything. That's when she pointed out that the wall was a load-bearing wall. For those of you who may not know, a load-bearing wall is load-bearing because it bears the weight of a portion of the house above said wall. Luckily, it wasn't a big section of the wall and the roof didn't come crashing down, but we would have at least braced it until more complete repairs could have been done. Other than that, I didn't notice anything unusual or shoddy. I asked if she minded me asking who it was. When she told me, everything suddenly made sense. I was familiar with this particular company, and I know their practices and their insane pricing schedule. She asked me what I would have charged to do what they did. I gave her a rough figure and then asked how much these guys had charged. I could see her try to hide her shock, and before she could answer, I asked if it was to the tune of $30,000, and now there was absolutely no hiding her shock. She confirmed that's exactly what they charged. I felt bad for her because I know the feeling of being taken, and it's so upsetting. Companies like this one prey on their customers, who can be in an extremely fragile state of mind due to the tragedy that has just befallen their family. They charge exorbitant fees and file liens on the property if their bill goes unpaid. It's sickening to me and leaves a stain on my industry as a whole. I tell you that story as an example of how the other guys make us look good with minimal effort on our part. That's not to say every crime scene cleaning company other than mine is a bad company, because there are quite a few good companies out there. But unfortunately, the bad far outweigh the good in our industry. Okay, so now back to the main course here. Luckily, the county rep I had spoken to was also familiar with the aforementioned company and did not include them in the bidding process. However, when I pulled up to the property, I saw two other companies that were not much better. In my head, I knew I already had won the job. I joined the small group of bidders and introduced myself. I shook hands and made nice. The county rep soon joined us and he explained to us that the owner of the property had passed away, and due to the remoteness of the property and the lack of family, he went undiscovered for about 6 months. The longest decomp I had done up to this point was 2 weeks. 6 months? Yikes, this was going to be a bad one for sure. After briefing us on the scene, we all walked in and, naturally, we all smelled the familiar scent of death and decay. He pointed us to the bathroom where the decedent had been found. I looked into the bathroom door and saw that the entire floor, wall to wall, was covered in a thick layer of body fluids that had turned black. Trails of these fluids were seen climbing the walls from the maggots that were birthed within the remains of the undiscovered corpse. The house was a three-story home built on a hillside. This meant that the entrance was on the top story. The bathroom where he had died was also on this floor. After a body has died and begins to decay, bacteria already present in the body begins to break it down. As it does, it produces gases. These gases build up in the body and it begins to bloat. Since the elasticity of the skin and tissue can only stretch so much, at some point it ruptures and the fluids within begin seeping out. These, like all fluids, obey the law of gravity and will travel the path of least resistance to the lowest point it can go. Now, anyone familiar with construction knows that rarely, if ever, is there a complete seal on any wall, floor, or fixture. Although they may not be visible or obvious, there are always tiny spaces where fluids can get to and through. Some examples are seams around the base of the toilet, the tiny gap between the floor and the bottom of the baseboard, seams in vinyl or hardwood flooring, etc., etc. So as the body fluids leaked and spread, they found and penetrated every one of these spaces. Being three stories up and looking for the lowest common denominator, the ground floor, it traveled in between walls and dripped down through the ceiling and continued like this until it got to its destination. It took 6 months for the fluids to get as far as they did. Oh boy, was this going to be a fun one. On top of the obviously needed biohazard work, the county wanted any and all valuable possessions loaded and transported to their warehouse, where it would eventually be auctioned off and the money used to pay off the decedent's debts and bills. Everything else would need to be disposed of and then odor remediation. At this point, we had a fairly solid idea of the scope of work needed, so we all left and were required to mail in our bids in sealed envelopes. Once all the bids were in, they would be opened together and the lowest bidder would get the job. This process helps to avoid any preferential treatment. I wasn't at all worried about someone else getting the job because I knew the other companies would overcharge the hell out of it. Sure enough, a week or so later, we got the call that our bid had been accepted and we scheduled to start. Since this was such a huge job, we had two of our guys on this job with us. While Ethan and I addressed the biohazard, our guys would be loading up the valuable and sellable property into our trailer. This would then be transported and unloaded at the county warehouse. And then we'd return to trash out everything else and do our odor treatment. Seemed like an easy enough plan to me. I should mention that one of these guys was fairly new and had been hired on at the recommendation of one of our other guys. He had only been on a handful of jobs, but from what I could tell, he worked hard and did well. During any job for this county, it is required that two county reps be on site during all work so as to ensure nothing valuable somehow makes its way into someone's pocket. Another sidetrack here, our crew travels to and from the job in our truck. We arrive on site as a team, we work as a team, and we leave as a team. When we return to the shop, we all unload and restock the truck together. The significance of this will make more sense in a little bit. So when we showed up to start work, We met with the county reps, made introductions, and then got briefed on any item or type of item that was to be saved and loaded into the trailer for transportation. We always try to go above and beyond in everything we do, and in an effort to stress how honest we were and completely remove any concerns about stealing, we disconnected the trailer and parked the truck in a manner where it was completely visible. That way, they could see that everything was making it into the trailer and not our truck. Once everyone was clear on what we were doing, we got started. The county guys took their position in their folding chairs at the front door. Ethan and I set up our equipment and got to work in the bathroom, and our guys started loading up the valuables. The fluids were thick, and when mixed with our chemicals, were not fully dry, but rather a viscous and tacky consistency. This requires a lot of scraping and wiping to get the floor clean. The flooring would then have to be removed along with the toilet, the baseboards, vanity, and portions of every wall. We would have to remove some of the subfloor too, and then follow the trail all the way down. By the time lunch rolled around, Ethan and I had the bathroom almost completely demoed. We were content to work through lunch, but again, it's a county job, and the reps are required to take a lunch break, which meant we couldn't be there while they weren't. So we all decided to take lunch together. When we came back, we resumed our work, and after about 30 minutes, one of the guys poked his head in and asked if we had seen Brad, the new guy. He hadn't been seen since we got back from lunch, so I left Ethan to work while I tried to help find Brad. It was a big house, but it was hardly the kind where someone could get lost, and it was out in the middle of nowhere, so there wasn't a whole lot of options for someone to go wandering off. How does Brad just done disappear? Boring and overpriced. That's what you can expect these days from 99% of watch brands out there. And the worst part is, you blend in and look like everyone else. No way, not me. And I hope that's not you either. That's why when I look to step up my game and stand out, I've turned to Vincero. Seriously, you need to go check out this brand now. Watches that look and feel like this typically retail for over $500. Vincero watches start at a little over $100. I'm not much of an accessories girl, but I've been wearing the Eero's Rose and Fog watch for a while, and I feel naked without it now. It's perfect for every occasion. I'm constantly complimented on it, and people always ask where I got it. So if you haven't picked out a present for that special someone, a Vincero watch would be the perfect gift for him or her. Don't just get a watch, get the watch. Visit getthewatch.net today to check out Vincero's stunning collection. If you use promo code John, you'll receive 15% off your very own Vincero watch. And if you're a last-minute shopper like me, don't worry, expedited shipping is available. Get a Vincero today at getthewatch.net. And don't forget promo code John. Now back to the show. Prior to us starting this job, we were told that the water at the property had been shut off, and so the toilets didn't work. Because it was a remote mountain village and this house overlooked nothing but wilderness, they had dug a hole behind a big tree in the backyard, and it was christened the bathroom. I personally wasn't going to squat over a hole in the ground. I am a lady, after all, and I would rather hold it until we got back to civilization. But it was good for the boys. So rather than poking my head around the tree to see this guy with his pants down around his ankles, I called out for him, and sure enough, he yelled back and said he was there using the restroom. Mystery solved. Although it seemed odd that he had been back there for so long, why hadn't he told anyone where he was going? I shrugged it off and suited up again and helped Ethan with the task at hand. By the end of the day, we had completely removed the fluid and contaminated materials and fully decontaminated all surfaces. The bathroom was completely demoed. The toilet, the flooring, vanity, sections of the walls, and some of the subfloor had been removed. The walls and ceilings below had also been cut into and removed. It looked like a renovation project when we were done, but it was all necessary. The trailer had been fully loaded, and all designated items had been removed and loaded up. We were feeling pretty good about ourselves. One more day to trash out everything left behind, some odor remediation, and we'd be all set. As our equipment was being packed and loaded, I was pulled aside by one of the county representatives. He asked me if I had any audio-video equipment in my truck, like a camera or something. I thought he was asking so that I could take some video or pictures of the job or something, so I told him no, but I had a camera on my phone if that would help. He said, no, that's fine, and then asked if I had any camping gear in my truck. Camping gear? Okay, this is getting strange. I told him no, and I started to get very confused as to why he was asking me this. He inquired about a few other items, all of which were also negative, but I was about to find out why he was asking. He asked if we could go to the back of my truck and verified that I truly had none of these items in my truck. I began freaking out internally because deep down I knew we were going to find what he had been asking about, but I didn't want to believe it. We got to the bed of the truck and I opened the tailgate and saw what I didn't want to see. There were a couple of bags that had been stuffed with various items, all of which contained the very things he had asked me about. I felt like I'd been punched in the gut. It was so unexpected that it didn't even register. I had no idea where it came from, and all I could do was stutter and stammer. He assured me he knew that I had nothing to do with it, and he wanted to ask just to make sure it really wasn't our equipment that we had brought to the job before he jumped to conclusions and started making accusations. He told me he had seen Brad every now and then throughout the day come out of the house with something in his hands, and rather than go to the trailer to load it up, he would go to the back of the truck and then back into the house with empty hands. I want to stress one thing here just to illustrate how stupid this guy was. You have two ex-cops and current county employees sitting directly outside the front door, which is the only path to the trailer and the truck. Literally, every item that came out of that house went by these guys and was observed and noted. Yet he still thought he could slip some by them and into the truck. Remember my teamwork sidetrack? This is where it comes into play. Even if I hadn't seen him put it in there, I would have seen it in there, or at the very least, it would have been noticed back at the shop while we were unloading. Don't you think I would have said something? Well, I can assure you I would have. I was certainly upset, but mostly I was disappointed. I liked Brad, and he was a hard worker, but this was not something that I could forgive and forget. I had zero tolerance for this type of behavior. We had just started working closely with the public admin, and it was a solid line of work for us. This company is our blood, sweat, and tears. We worked so hard on establishing and building a name for ourselves, and this punk kid just completely jeopardized it all. Not only that, but here we are thinking we're untouchable and making ourselves out to be the best. And then one of our guys gets caught stealing on a job? I was so sick to my stomach. My imagination went into overdrive and I saw the smear campaign play out. It was going to make its way through the county offices and eventually onto the internet, and we'd be done for good. I filled Ethan in on what had happened, and after I did, we confronted Brad with the county reps and fired him on the spot. He seemed surprised and shocked. He tried to plead and explain it was an honest mistake. He didn't know these things could be sold or would even be wanted. Honestly, I couldn't even tell you what the items were at this point, but it didn't matter. Nobody steals from our customers, no matter how small or insignificant it may seem. I told him there was no excuse, and it had been made very clear from the beginning multiple times that everything that had any perceived value was to be loaded into the trailer. There was no dibs and nothing was up for grabs. He was sad, but at least he understood. I handed the items over to one of the reps and apologized again. I thought that was the end of it. Well, turns out it wasn't. It was about to get way worse. One of the reps then said to Brad, "Tell you what, you can empty your pockets out right here and now, or I can get the local police to come up and search you." Brad was wearing cargo pants, and he had a lot of pockets to stash small stuff. He made one right decision and unloaded his pockets onto the open tailgate in front of everyone. Sure enough, he began to pull out more items that he was trying to filch. A gold-plated pen, a small bundle of socks, a flashlight, and a few other various items were splayed out before us, and my disappointment continued. He was asked if any of those items were his, and all but the socks had been pocketed from the house. He put the socks back in his pocket, and then I was asked to search the truck and make sure nothing else had been placed in there. I tore that truck apart and only found another flashlight, which I gave back to the rep. Well, that's the end of it. I had a thief on staff, and I started thinking about how I was going to recover from this, or if I could recover at all. Turns out it was not the end of it, and we still hadn't seen the worst of it. One of the reps asked Brad to put his hands on his head, which he did. After donning a pair of gloves, he held Brad's hands in place and began searching his pockets just to make sure there really wasn't any more. Luckily, the only thing he pulled out was the socks he had brought from home. It's funny, but I was so flabbergasted that the fact that he had brought a pair of socks to work never struck me as odd. I rationalized in my own head that he had stinky feet and so brought them so he could change into them if his feet got too bad. Well, this 30-year police veteran didn't think the same way I did. As he unwrapped the socks, he asked if there was anything in there that was going to poke or stab him. Psh, no, it's just an extra pair of socks for his stinky feet, I thought to myself. Luckily, I kept my mouth shut because I would have looked even more like a fool when Brad answered yes. As he answered, the county rep uncovered a pair of syringes. Brad was then asked what was in them. Well, he's just a diabetic, right? I said to myself. Imagine my shock, horror, and surprise when the answer wasn't insulin, but heroin. If I had been punched in the gut earlier, well, I was just knocked in the head with a 2x4. What? Ethan and I said in stereo. Are you fucking kidding me? At this point, all thoughts of decorum and professionalism were out the goddamn window. I didn't care if anyone saw me lose my shit on this guy because as far as I was concerned, he had just slit our throats and was unremorsefully watching us bleed out. At this point, my company was ruined and Brad got an uncensored earful. I couldn't tell you exactly what I said to him at this point, but I know that I made it very clear that he had just destroyed us. All of our hard work to not only portray ourselves as the best, but to also actually be the best company with the highest standards had just been dashed into pieces in one fell swoop. I was literally shaking with fury, and it took everything in me not to strangle him. Everyone just stood there watching as I unloaded on him. Nobody stepped in to stop me, and had I actually made a move to swing at him, I don't think anyone would have lifted a finger to stop me. Once my piece was said, I immediately turned and confronted the other guy. After all, he had been the one to refer and vouch for this kid. I asked if he knew anything about the drugs or the stealing, and he assured me he had no idea. He said if he had, he wouldn't have suggested him in a million years. I turned back around with my arms folded to keep from lunging at Brad and watched as the former cops photographed all the evidence. As I've mentioned, I've never done drugs, but from what I know of heroin, it makes you sleepy. So why the hell would this guy bring heroin on a job site? I mean, wouldn't it be pretty obvious if he shot up? And don't you need a spoon or a rubber hose or a rubber band or something? I was pondering this as he was made to put his arms out in front of him, palms up, and it was very difficult not to see the bright red areas on both his arms where he had just shot up. It made sense what he had actually been doing for almost an hour when he done disappeared earlier. That's why he didn't tell anyone he was going to the quote-unquote bathroom. The local police were called, and when they showed up, they were informed of the situation, and Brad was pulled aside to have his rights read and information taken down. Luckily, the county rep still seemed friendly enough towards us. I guess my animated invective was sufficient to show that there is no tolerance for that crap and is in no way reflective of my company. Brad was still being confronted by the local police officer, and I asked one of the ex-cops about the heroin. I was told that it wasn't just heroin, it was also meth. This is how I learned about speedballing. I guess the combo of the two illegal substances provides the euphoria of heroin with the high of meth all in one. Anyway, the local cop finished, and I guess rather than being arrested, Brad was given a citation and a court date. The cop left, and Brad trudged back over to my truck. One of the reps told him that he had messed up because it was a long walk home. As pissed as I was and as much as I wanted to throw him off a cliff, well, I couldn't do that. I can sound mean and I can puff up quite a bit, but really I'm a softie. I couldn't let him walk home despite everything I had just seen. It was an hour and a half drive and it was getting dark. He certainly deserved it, but I just couldn't. It was a long, quiet drive home, though. When I dropped him off at his house, I demanded my uniforms back, and once he had retrieved them and handed them over, I just took off without saying a word. The next day, we were able to finish up the job, and we got everything fully cleaned up, and we took care of the odor. The reps were happy with everything, and despite the fact that this had all happened the day before, it was as if Brad had never existed. It seemed our reputation was miraculously still untarnished. I'm still upset at Brad for what he did, even to this day, but ultimately, it's my responsibility. I mean, the truth is, because he was referred by a good employee, he was given the fast track to working for us. The only thing in the way of a drug test he had received was, "Do you take drugs?" His answer was no, but once, a few years back, he had taken some old sleeping meds and drove and got a DUI one time. Not great, but I overlooked it because we needed the help and he came with a high recommendation. After this all went down, I was speaking to a friend of mine who happened to know Brad's father. She told me what actually happened with this quote-unquote sleeping med incident. It wasn't sleeping meds, it was heroin. He was passed out in his car, engine running, at a stop sign, and the responding officer had to break his window in order to get to him. He had overdosed and almost died. Needless to say, that was the last time I hired someone without a drug test and a background check. One final thing I will say is that as horrible of a situation as this was, it actually taught me two things. One, it taught me not to inflate my cranium too much. No matter how good you think you are, things can happen to bring you crashing down to earth. The second thing is that even if you're not perfect, as long as you strive to be the best, you'll always be improving. I don't think I'm untouchable anymore. I've had some bumps along the way, but I've learned from every one of them, and I can only hope that my continued attempts at perfection will serve as an example for the entire industry. Thank you for listening to The Cleaning of John Doe. Today's episode was produced by Resonate Recordings. If you're looking for another podcast while you're waiting for our next episode to drop, check out this one.
The Fall Line Podcast is a true crime audio serial focusing on marginalized communities in Georgia. The first season investigates the March 18th, 1990 disappearance of Augusta, Georgia twins Nanette and Jeanette Millbrook. The twins, who were 15 at the time, were treated without cause as runaways, and their case was closed less than a week after their 17th birthday. Now, our podcast works to amplify the voices of the twins' family and to uncover facts, explore and dispel rumors, and develop theories in their case. Season 1.5, out this fall, will cover the case of missing Brunswick, Georgia siblings Monica and Michael Bennett, who disappeared in 1989. Join us as we work in real time to investigate their case.
Awesome. Well, thanks for tuning in, and be sure to head over to Apple Podcast and subscribe. This week's t-shirt winner is Erica Lee. Congratulations, Erica. Be sure to email info@thecleaningofjohndoe.com and let me know your t-shirt size and mailing address. Next, we have the two holiday gift card winners. The winners are Jamie Wilson Trevino's nominee and Kim Vu's nominee. Congratulations, guys. Be sure to email info@thecleaningofjohndoe.com and give me the mailing address so I can get those gift cards in the mail. If you'd like a chance to win one of our t-shirts, please visit our website at thecleaningofjohndoe.com and join our mailing list at the bottom of any page other than the homepage, and you'll be automatically entered to win a t-shirt. Please tune in next week for Living with the Dead, an incredibly sad story of a mother living with her dead son for over a month.